Shall we begin?
Let's begin.
This is incredible! Johnny Buss with a masterful solo goal.
What a finish from Samuel Silveira!
Robertson! And the Man City youngster opens the scoring.
Oh, and it's Geraint Kewell who has equalised right at the end.
This is the Soccer Who's podcast, the show all about Australian football as we look to unearth the next generation of Socceroos who will one day wear the green and gold.
Welcome to Soccer Who's podcast. My name is Lockie. I'm joined by James, my co-host, and this show is all about the future of Australian football, specifically looking through the lens of the Socceroos and hopefully one day vying for World Cup glory. But after a couple of results this week, that might be a little bit further away than we first hoped. We'll get to that in a second. Before we go anywhere, I'd like to give a special welcome to Al Kabila FC, my new favourite Middle Eastern football side, with the signing of their manager, A-League legend Stephen Taylor. James, you have just been made aware of Al Kabila FC. Do you hope to see any Australians playing there anytime soon?
No.
What?
No.
What?
Yeah, I know. Outrageous.
Stephen Taylor's probably going to be scouting the A-League.
I heard maybe... I thought he only went there because he thought it was a bowling league.
Well, yeah, look, I don't know. The whole thing...
He loves his pins, you know, in a long alleyway.
No, I know. I saw what you were getting at there. What an interesting thing. Having just been made aware of it before we hit record, it's a bit of a lull. Although if they want a podcast to really
build a podcast in 365 days,
yeah, we'll build a pod. I mean, that's what we have been doing. Although it's been longer than 365 days, and we're still building. So
yeah, true.
But if, you know, if the El Kabila guys want to come on this podcast and pitch themselves to an Australian audience for money, we'll I'll bend over to oil money. I assume that's where a lot of their money comes from. Oil money.
Oh, hard to say, really. Don't know the finances, but there's a lot of silly money over in that part of the world.
I'm not usually a fan of oil money. I think money has actually ruined high levels of football. If I'm honest. Even just this week, we've seen a bit of a side tangent. The Football Association in England announcing some changes to the way that the FA Cup runs to, I'd say, protect the Premier League clubs, which is annoying. That's partially why I love the international game, because you can't really tamper with it too much. FIFA They do their best. They really try to mess up what is a great format, even in expanding the World Cup in 2026. But it's very hard to mess up international football. Very easy with the influence of a lot of money to mess up.
You know, one thing I do like that FIFA have done?
What?
The Club World Cup. The remap to that. I think that's cool.
I think that's cool. I'd agree with that. But that's why I love... This is why this is primarily a Soccer Who's podcast and not one talking about high levels of football in the sense that, it's kind of... I think it's kind of boring seeing the same teams win all the time because they've paid to win.
Yeah, to a degree. I think it's far more nuanced than... They have oil money, therefore they win.
Yeah, well, no, that's true.
But yes, there is an element of lack of jeopardy, I would say.
Yeah.
It's not so much that they're guaranteed to win, but as you see, especially, in Europe's top five leagues, the ones that have the money are guaranteed not to lose.
Yeah.
You're not going to see them get fall down the league system after, a bad season. You're not going to see, relegation threats. You're never going to see that.
And even within the Premier League, you've seen clubs this season who have been a little bit tricky, tried to skirt their way around financial fair play rules and been punished for it. And then you've got the club that's doing it the most who will likely, at this point in time, probably not see punishment because the Premier League also announced within the last month or so that they are switching from a punishment that is points to, we might just adopt what the NBA has with a royalty tax. Lottery, yeah. And so we will just find the money as opposed to find the points, which is also...
It's an interesting idea. I think there's a bit more merit to it than people have given it credence for. I think the importance of that, though, is it needs to be substantially tied back to profitability, right?
But
and
if you
need to, you need to make sure that profits are ethical. I think that's what it comes back to.
Sure. But if you're giving one club one sort of punishment in the term in terms of points, and then you're going to another club that, if all 115, I think, charges, even if half of those were worthy of a point, 1 point deduction, like that would see them relegated.
Yeah, I'd imagine.
And but that won't happen.
Wouldn't apply new rules to old.
You'd like to think so, issues, but I don't have that hope.
Yeah, look, this is a big handbrake.
I know. I just but,
yeah.
The Alcabila stuff really got me going. Hey, before we go anywhere, let's start the show how we usually do it. Let's go back to, I guess, the question that we asked last week. Only one response, mostly because I thought it was a stinky question, if I'm honest.
Wow.
I'm sorry. But Michael Ruse for the Soccer Ruse, Boone just says, he works hard in the press, makes himself available, but lack of technique lets him down. It's a no from him. And I tend to agree with Boone.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I get the sense by the... I look at the way Michael Ruse reads the game, and it is very, very fluent, and he gets himself into great areas, and he is a great presser of the ball.
Yeah.
He reminds me a lot, at just 21 years of age, of a young Mitch Duke, right?
Yep.
Similar kind of mold of player as well. Bigger body, likes to throw his weight around. I wouldn't be at all be surprised if he can develop in terms of his chance creation, especially in that technical aspect of his game, for him to end up being a very good A-League player to borderline Socceroos player one day.
Okay, I mean, he is only 21, so plenty of time on his side. And we could see, in a couple of years, if he continues to grow and develop.
I just really like the way he reads the game as a striker. You don't see much of that.
Sure. Yeah, that's true. But thanks so much for your response, Boone. Let's chat about, I think, the elephant of the room this week regarding Australian football. I'm talking about the Oli Roos. Oli Roos have kicked off their under-23 Asian Cup campaign. Obviously, the top three sides qualify for the Olympics, and at this point it won't even look like we're going to be top three within our group, which is not what we expected. Oli Roos, they went down 1-0 to Indonesia, and then before that first round nil-all draw with Jordan. And I'll be honest, I haven't actually watched either of these games. You are the one who has. But looking at this starting 11s, they've rotated them, so it's not like he's gone with the exact same side. There's a little bit of rotation within these squads. Maybe that plays a part in that. But, yeah, really not where we thought we'd be two games into this campaign. We've got another game to go. And what were you saying? To qualify, we have to win.
We have to beat... Is it Qatar?
Yep.
By the same margin, I believe, Jordan beat... who are they playing? Indonesia.
Yep. Which,
yeah.
Yeah. Well, I think it's by more of a margin.
Yes, by more. Yeah, by a greater margin. My mistake.
Yeah.
Yes.
No. Which, I don't have high hopes for. I'd love to be proven wrong, but it's really disappointing, I think. As someone who's watched both games and has watched a fair bit of youth international football, what do you think is going wrong? Is it a systemic issue that we've got with Australian football, where they're playing similar styles, where something's going wrong? Is it something within the way the Vidmar is managing this team? Is it a personnel selection?
I think it's not personnel related. When I look at the players and I look at how they perform, their raw attributes, and I then look at how they translate into Oli Roos. Most of the players are minimized in terms of their abilities.
What do you mean by that?
So the ability that they have when playing for the Oli Roos is not correlating to the ability that they display when playing for club. And when you speak about raw things like technical abilities such as passing, shooting, you know, all these things that is like, yeah, okay, that translates, right? That's an easy one to translate. It's not like you're getting out-muscled, right?
Mm.
That, to me, then speaks to a system issue.
Yep.
And I think Trevor Morgan has set up this team abhorrently.
What about Tony Vidmar?
Now, Tony Vidmar as well. Both of them.
Because, I mean, Morgan would have been involved before this.
Yeah, both of them.
Vidmar's
yeah.
only just kind of taken over the team. But Morgan had them, I think, when they were Joey's.
Yes. And both of them, and the Joey's results as well, is also very poor.
Mm.
Because the way it is set up is... what annoys me most is players like Sekicic, right?
Mm-hmm.
So just pushing Sekicic out on the wing is the biggest waste of talent.
Mm.
He's the best, to be honest, he's the best number, like attacking number eight in this squad. Yep. You're playing him on the wing when you need to win a game.
Mm.
Against Indonesia. And then you don't even play him against Jordan. And instead you play Brook, who's, you know, he's a fine for a youth player, you know, and Reece Yulee, who's a decent player, in Holtman. But then you back that up by playing a player like Talbo and Farrell on the wing back positions,
mm.
who are both very conservative fullbacks.
Yep.
It speaks to the reason that we struggle to create sometimes in these Australian youth setups, because you don't get to your personnel connections correct. If you're going to play with conservative fullbacks, you need really good attacking eights. If you're going to play with box-to-box eights, like Holman, like, you know, like Jelicic to a lesser extent,
mm-hmm.
you have to have attacking wingbacks.
Yeah.
You can't, you know, have both. And if you're going to shove Sekicic out onto the wing, you better have a darn good wing back ready to overlap him to play as the winger so he can come into the half space. And that is the reason, the biggest reason that we do not thrive, because Morgan and Vidmar both played with compact fullbacks that sat in,
mm-hmm.
didn't push up the wing. And the second you end up with a flat back four, pretty much, you lose the game, as far as I'm aware. Because that flat back four isn't going to create anything unless you have two big, beefy strikers up top that can head something in.
Yeah.
Which we don't have, which is okay, because we have a quality strikers in Kuol and Toure.
Yeah.
But to get the best out of them, it has to be fluent attacking football, right? It can't be reductive. And it's just so frustrating that we're setting up like, you know, it's Brexit football, right? Is how we set this team up from the back. Yeah. And Brexit football has its place. When I say Brexit football, I mean classic 90s, 70s to 90s English football. 4-4-2, kick it long, chase it. You know, and this team isn't designed for that. This team is designed for smart, quick attacking football. And you're trying to play them, oh, let's have some short passes, because we're told that short passes is good, but let's make sure that we all have six players behind the ball to be defensively responsible. Like, no, be brave.
Mm. Does that speak to, I guess, Ernie Merrick's role? Does Arnold have a part to play in this as well? My understanding is that Merrick oversees all kind of technical stuff within Australian football, but does Arnold have any influence in this as well?
So, obviously, it depends on the decision that they go with. If they want to set up the junior national teams in their own unique position, where they develop their own brand of football, like what is the Australian style of football. And sadly, they did play the Australian style of football, but that hasn't been good for a while. Mm. So, you can pin that on Merrick. I think keeping managers like, you know, like Vidmar, like Morgan, who are very old school, is fine from a technical development standpoint, but does not translate well to tactical output. And I think the most important thing for juniors, you know, the junior national teams, whether that's Ollie Roos, Joey's, whatever age it may be, they're at that stage where they need good tactical output, not technical development. Technical development can be handled by the club. And that's why I have a slight issue with how they're approaching things, because it seems like they're focusing on, oh, we want better dribblers. We want players to be more expressive. Like, no, you don't want to develop that in players. You want players to be put in a position to show that.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's the big difference, I think. And when you have a flat back four, then you have your three midfielders trying to progress the ball by themselves, which then leaves you with, you know, the two wingers having to drop deep. Then you have an isolated striker on top. You're not scoring goals, right? In a 4-5-1. And that's what it broke down to all too often, a 4-5-1, which is why you get this, what, you know, you often see online called a U-shape.
Yeah.
Because the one is so isolated and we're so compact, the other team is so compact, the only way to build up is to try and force it down the wing.
Yeah.
Which isn't great. And that's why you need to use depth on a football pitch. You need to use width on a football pitch rather than just, you know, safe short passes. You need to be brave. You need to push players high. So it is partly Merrick. I think Arnold has more influence than most would think over these setups, because I for sure think Arnold plays ahead in squad selections. He doesn't, I don't think he'll have the final say, but I think he'll have a, oh, I want this guy soon for the national team, and I think it would be good to see him in this tournament. I would not be surprised if he has those kind of calls.
Yeah. Yeah, it's not necessarily a simple solution, I don't think. I think, unfortunately, like a lot of things in Australian football, a good review is required and a reassessment of, is this working? Why isn't this working? What can we do to change things?
Yeah, something that a lot of Dutch clubs do, and a lot of, like, La Masia do this as well, which is Barcelona's academy, is they have publicly accessible their football philosophy. What is that tactical philosophy? And you can find them online, you'll find them. And they literally give these out to players when they're joining. Like, this is our tactical philosophy. They give it out to coaches.
I think I saw Al Kabila has theirs publicly available as well.
I'm going to quickly skip over that. but
it was in a TikTok video.
Be quiet, you. Something that, but you've really now distracted me. That is outrageous.
Yes.
Something that I think, and I would have done, if my first thing that I would have done in the NMX role is post or create a tactical philosophy and have it accessible, right? Because I think it's also in the best interest of the game. If you're looking at, you know, if I'm a local club and I'm looking to develop talent,
yeah,
you know, as a pathway to the A-League, or if I'm an A-League club even, I want to know this because I know the fruit of playing for the Ollieroos, playing for the Socceroos, does to a player's price tag.
Yeah.
So knowing that philosophy is beneficial then for me to make sure I'm developing those attributes of a player to then.
And not that you want every A-League club to be playing the exact same brand of football, because there should be stylistic differences, I think.
There inherently will be between coaches, right? But I'm also saying from a player development standpoint, yeah, I think that is really important.
Yeah.
And that's what we're missing, I think. There's no clear identity in the state. Well, there is a clear identity, but it's not good.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I hope to see something drastically change in the game against Qatar. And in typical Australian football fashion, we make it through by the skin of our teeth and then we progress from there, but not positive after the first two games.
Well, I mean, we've been grouped historically in this.
Yeah, so. I know. Well, should we talk about something a little bit?
Yeah,
a bit more interesting, bit not
more upbeat.
More upbeat is what I'm trying to say. James, let's go around the grounds. Let's chat about the players that have impressed within the past week. Kicking things off in Europe, someone who could have been a part of this Ollieroos squad, but I believe club said no. Ale Sicardi, clean sheet against Palermo. They currently sit top with four games left to play, and by my maths, if they win two games, they all but secure promotion. I think they'd be on equal points with whoever third is. Don't know what the goal difference is like. They win three and they all but secure the title.
Yeah.
So it's in their hands. Destiny is in their hands, and they should be back in Serie A next season.
Yeah. Clean sheet against Spezia as well, which happened in this past week. And Sicardi's coming on leaps and bounds, developing well. And it's, you know, more of the same really from Sicardi. Really good distribution, really safe on the ball, but also can find that long ball when needed as well, and dominant in the air. He's a big, strong lad. And I mean, he should be a Socceroos regular by now, but hopefully after a promotion.
Yeah. You lock him in then. If he is not being picked for the Socceroos despite playing, you know, Serie A football, that would be ridiculous. They're playing back four, which is interesting. Palmer had been for the past little bit playing a back three, had they not, with him playing on the outside.
That was last year.
Goes to show how much I pay attention to the tactical setup of Palmer this season. But that's still, I don't know if we've talked about it on this podcast, at least, the switch to him playing as a centre-back. In a back four.
Yeah, we did.
I don't think we did, James.
Start of the season, we did.
James.
Definitely touched on it and how it was testament to his development of switching from a back three, where then he was the centre back that was dropped at the start of the season, and then fought his way back into the centre back combination of the two, and how much that speaks to his security defensively in holding the shape of the team.
Really not sure if we did talk about it. That doesn't quite ring a bell, but now that I've baited you into talking about it right now, I'm happy.
we'll go with that.
Moving over to England, Ipswich, 1-1 draw against Middlesbrough. Burgess, Silvera, Luongo all playing. Silvera at 60 minutes for Middlesbrough. But most interesting in that match, Luongo scored what was a great, great little finish.
Luongo,
back post finish. And Ipswich are looking pretty good at the moment as far as promotion as well. They sit on top, 1 point in it currently. Leicester have a game in hand. But you would hope and expect at this point in the season that they will be promoted to the Premier League.
Oh, it's crazy the amount of points that Ipswich, Leicester and Leeds have dropped.
Yeah.
In the last few games.
That's why I don't want to commit to say they will be.
Southampton are sneaking up on them all now as well.
They are. I mean, as we record this right now, there's four teams currently comfortably within the 80-point range. West Brom sitting in fifth with 72 points. So they're 12 points behind fourth. There is a world in which Southampton and... Who was top half of this? It was definitely...
Leicester and Ipswich have all had periods of the season on top.
Yeah.
Okay. But Leicester have been the ones who have been on top for the majority of the year.
Yeah. And so, I mean, there is a world that Leeds and Southampton, who were not outside chances, because obviously Leeds and Southampton have been Premier League clubs within the last 5 years.
Last year.
Well, yeah. I was kind of keeping it general, because Ipswich hasn't been a Premier League club.
In a long time.
In a very, very long time. And we've seen West Brom and Norwich also in the Premier League, you know, fairly recently. So, yeah. One to watch for sure, the championship. It's going to be exciting as it comes down to the final day. And hopefully we have Aussies involved at Ipswich. Leicester would be nice to see an Aussie involved, but I don't
Not really involved.
No, that's...
Present.
Well, in the same way that Alex Robertson was involved in the Portsmouth match, there on the sidelines watching as Portsmouth picked up the title. They won the league. Yenge scoring in that match in League One. A nice day for Portsmouth fans, and great to see them back in the championship. I also love seeing Robertson on the sideline supporting the lads. He was part of the squad this season before he got injured, and has gone back to Manchester City for rehab.
It'll be interesting to see what happens next.
Yeah, but yeah, great to see Yenge get the goal in the 3-2 win, and yeah, have them secure promotion.
Yeah, good left footed finish. Straight down the guts, as we like it. So, yay. Kasing Yang developing well. 25 years old. Been a bit of a late bloomer with all those injuries. And it'll be really interesting to see how he translates to the championship.
Yeah.
Because he has all the traits, but as has been his career so far, hasn't really had enough fitness to put them together yet. And this year, he's been the first, more than last previous seasons, injury for a year, even though he was still out for 6 weeks with, I believe it was a quad issue. Can't quite remember, but if Yenge stays healthy, it'll be very interesting to see how many minutes he gets in the championship, how much he develops, and then where that puts him in terms of the hopes for Socceroos' regularity, because the Socceroos need a striker, and can Yenge be that guy?
Well, I mean, his brother, Tete, played this week, and it was a fascinating game. 4-2 loss for him against Hearts, and in that game, Cam Devlin did score, and I think Hearts now have secured European football, which is great for the boys over there. But what I found fascinating about Tete Yenge, he got a red card whilst off the pitch. He was subbed off.
Arsene Wenger.
Yeah. They were 2-0 up, I believe, and then they went down 4-2, which is not great, especially they're around the relegation zone, if I'm fairly certain. Yeah, okay, they're in last.
Yeah. And they're bottom and 12 points adrift.
Yeah, so they will be relegated, it looks like. And so when you 2-0 up against a side, you then go down 4-2. He's clearly frustrated. And what happened was he's kicked a water bottle into his own dugout. Not at anyone else. Not at the Hearts players or fans. He's kicked a water bottle into his own dugout and copped a second yellow for that action and has been sent off. So his manager's appealed to the press and I guess to the league this week going, hey, have some common sense. You know, we understand if he kicked the water bottle into anyone else other than us, but you're seriously going to give this guy a red card and let this red card stand for something like that. What a fascinating scenario.
It is. And I have to say, Lachlan, one of my favorite things to watch in football, I just find it funny, is when a workhorse midfielder scores a goal like Devlin.
Yes.
How they celebrate is, to me, just one of the funniest things to watch.
Because I guess he's not used to scoring goals all that often.
But often workhorse, you know, they have this kind of personality where they're very down to earth, right?
Yeah.
So the celebration is often quite mute. You know, it's not like when a centre back scores, they go off wild.
Yeah, yeah.
Like you sometimes see, like Aldridge did, right?
Yeah, yeah.
On the weekend. But then you have Devlin who kind of just runs off and he's like, what am I meant to do now?
Yeah.
It's so funny to watch.
Great game.
It's a good goal.
Yeah, great game for Hearts. Devlin, obviously, playing. We had Kai Rolls also playing.
And Atkinson.
Did no one off?
Out with a hamstring injury, which is also why he wasn't with the Ollyroos.
That's right. So, great to see Hearts get European football next season. That'll be great for them. So, lots of positive vibes around a lot of our Socceroos at this point in time. Another one vying for promotion, Jackson Irvine.
Yes.
Unfortunately, lost this week, but scored. And Metcalf also got an assist.
Not to him, but an assist.
Yeah. But Metcalf got an assist. St. Pauli dropped a second. But at this point in time, they should still get promoted, I feel.
Yeah, I mean, it's one of those things that, they should get promoted. But come on, they were going to win the league for so long. And it would have been two losses in a row.
It would have been great to see Irvine lift the lift the trophy.
I mean, they're still in it, right? They're only down a point.
There's 1 point in it. I mean, Holstein Kiel, I think that's how you say that in first, they're playing fourth. So there's two big fixtures coming up this next match day with St. Pauli also playing Hanover, who are in fifth. So it's going to be a fun little match day to keep an eye on. And hopefully for St. Pauli, they jump back on top.
Mm. Yeah, and I've really loved how St. Pauli have kind of molded Metcalf into this attacking wide 10 who defends as a right winger, but then sits in on possession as kind of like this right cam to allow the wing back overlap. It's really entertaining football to watch. So if you can tune into a St. Pauli game, I would recommend it because it's really good quality football.
In Australia, how do we go about it? Is that BN?
Yes, it would be BN.
There you go. Finally, at least in Europe, Christian Volpato, a name that we haven't spoken about on this show in a little bit, he got a start in a 3-3 draw against AC Milan.
Yeah, I mean, it was good to see for Volpato getting a start, and it was a clearly roll of the dice by the manager because he comes on off the bench and creates insane chances that apparently no one can finish. I mean, just looking at him compared to other Serie A attacking mids and wingers, he's in the 99th percentile for chances created so far this season.
Mm.
And that means only 1% of attacking mids or wingers in the Serie A have been better than him.
Yeah.
One of the best chance creators and also a great presser. And that, you know, is kind of common for bench players because they'll come on and they'll be a spark. But he had a decent game, subbed off at halftime. And for those, you know, listening at home, Christian Volpato, I'm going to speak about him until we have a final commitment because there hasn't been a final commitment yet.
And as far as I'm concerned, he's still eligible to play for the Socceroos.
Exactly.
So, I'm happy to also talk about him on this podcast. They were 2-1 up at halftime. So as far as I'm concerned,
And his pressing was absolutely phenomenal this game. Really good pressing. And that's one of the huge reasons that AC Milan struggled. And especially Rafael Leao. He had a really tricky game because Volpato had come in and help his right back sit in and make it difficult for Leao to find space. And then that also really hampered Hernandez's overlapping ability. Mm. So I can understand why he was subbed off as well, because he was tiring. You could see it. You know, young player, you know, hasn't been used to 90-minute football in quite a while. Comes on, starts a game, legs burn out quickly in those kind of circumstances, but really promising signs.
And Hernandez isn't exactly a pushover. Like, the bloke's won a Champions League, a Club World Cup. He's won Nations League, Serie A as well. So, very good player.
Yeah. Did he win the World Cup as well?
Was
he
in that French squad? No, he wasn't.
No? Okay.
Unfortunately not. Oh.
Well, there you go.
There you go.
But yeah, the bigger thing, I think, for Volpato is looking at the context of the season now for Sassuolo. They're now officially, well, they were officially, but they're still in the relegation zone. 26 points. 20th is sorted, right?
Yeah.
Salernitana is gone. Relegated Serie B. Parma will replace them.
Yeah.
But for Sassuolo, they're 2 points adrift from safety. There's 2 points separating them from 15th, right?
Yeah.
So it's a really tight relegation zone this year. Obviously, 18th, 19th, and 20th get relegated in Serie A. Mm-hmm. So for Sassuolo, that point against AC Milan is really important just to stay in touch with the safety positions and be very close. And up next, they've got Lech, who currently sit 14th with 32 points. So Lecce. It could be a massive game for their safety.
Yeah, it's once again, we get to the end of the season and there's Aussies involved in both promotion and relegation playoffs. And
hopefully we see it soon in Australia.
You and I are on the same page about that. That would be something to behold because it gets to the end of the A-League season at the moment. I go, okay.
Sweet, that's done.
Righto. Hey, speaking of the A-League, Central Coast Mariners involved this week in the AFC Cup, which is the second, it's the Europa League equivalent
of Asia.
And interestingly, their flight got delayed. So their game this weekend had to be
postponed.
But a draw in the AFC Cup is, you know, it's not too bad.
Well, it's really important because it's a two-legged tie.
Yep.
So drawing 1-1 in the away leg and a hard away leg as well is really impressive.
I know across other leagues and comps there, the away goal rule is no longer, you know, in the Champions League and in the European leagues. Is that the same? Do we know?
I'm not sure. Okay. I haven't refreshed my rule set yet for the AFC Cup because, to be honest, Asian club continental competitions seem to change every year. So it's really hard to remember all these things because, once again, next year, they're changing.
I even still, though, a 1-1 draw away from home is...
A great result.
It's
a good goal by Caltech as well.
Got some Socceroos players in Nisbet, and then Vukovic, former Socceroo, and then some other young promising players within this Central Coast side as well involved in that match. So great to see Australia doing really well. Did I see something... I think maybe you sent it to me earlier this week, just about the prize money involved.
Hasn't been confirmed, it's reported. But yes, so Central Coast have already locked up Asian Champions League Elite, as they call it now, qualification. They qualified for that through the A-League. Yep. Unfortunately, with how the Asian rules work, is you take your... So the place that you take your continental football through is primarily through your domestic league and then through your continental performance.
Sure.
Which means if they did win the AFC Cup, they would take the Champions League Elite space from their A-League qualification route.
Okay.
And then the qualification through the AFC Cup would drop down to the runners-up. Whereas in Europe, it's the other way around. Yeah. Your qualification is primarily through through your performance in Europe. So if... In Europe, Central Coast would have qualified through the AFC Cup performance.
Yeah, okay.
And then Champions League Elite would have dropped down in the Australian leagues.
Yeah, that is a little bit strange.
Yeah, I don't like that. No. That's how it works.
If an Australian team, or let's you know, put it to Europe, let's say an English team wins the Champions League, it just means the next cab off the rank within the Premier League.
Yeah, or it rewards the nation from which the club came.
Yeah.
As opposed to just the next best team in the competition they won.
Yeah.
Which I guess you could argue in the sporting merit sense makes a bit more sense because they've clearly they could have performed better than this team that is in this domestic league.
Yeah.
Right? Because a runners-up finish in the AFC Cup would be more impressive than finishing third in the A-League.
Yeah, but I think there's something for the nations being involved.
Yeah.
And then supporting, like, I'm a Brisbane Roar supporter, you're a Brisbane Roar supporter, but I still want to see Australian teams do well because we're at a point in our growth as a footballing nation where every team that does well in Asia is important.
Every single point counts,
especially
in our qualification stuff.
If some of those rumors are true in the AFC Elite competition regarding prize money.
Oh, so let me clarify that for you because I realize we haven't clarified this for the listeners yet.
Yep.
So if you win the Champions League Elite, you gain pathway to the Club World Cup.
Okay.
And the Club World Cup is rumored to be $50 million Australian dollars if you qualify in prize money.
Which
you may think is a lot, but when you think about the amount of money that FIFA has access to, and FIFA's now setting up this tournament, and clubs are saying, well, we're already playing so much football, it has to be tempting for the clubs to say, oh, actually, this tournament, it's a good one. And a guaranteed $50 million is a very good way to say to European clubs especially, oh, yeah, that's worth it. We like this competition. We'll play.
Yeah.
Which then, obviously, in sporting fairness, they can't offer $50 million to the European clubs and $2 million to the Asian clubs. It has to be consistent. So $50 million for an Australian club would be game changing.
It would be. I mean, it does cost a fair bit of money to be involved in these tournaments because we're flying halfway around the world as well. But $50 million would cover that cost, I would imagine.
So
comprehensively. And for clubs looking to build or buy a stadium, $50 million would be quite good.
Useful. But we also have to understand how hard it's going to be for an Australian club to get there.
Yes.
Because it works on your qualification rating as your nation.
Mm.
And Australia's is very low, especially post-COVID, where we withdrew from one of the Asian tournaments. So we got no qualification points that year. So we're a few years behind. I think it's still two more years until that's wiped off.
Yeah.
So you get qualified for the Club World Cup through your continental qualification points, which we will not get, or through winning the Asian Champions Cup Elite, Champions League Elite.
Yeah.
They change the name every year. It's done.
It would be nice if they just...
So the only team that would have qualified... Consistent. Oh, that would be very nice. The only team in Australian history that would have qualified this has always existed would have been Western Sydney Wanderers when they won it.
And even still, imagine them with $50 million... dollars,
yeah,
or even the equivalent of 50 million.
Here's a very interesting one though, Lachlan. Sure. Oceania have a guaranteed spot.
Oceania.
So, yeah.
No way.
So, Auckland City are going to be getting 50 million.
That's, really?
Yeah, if that is true. An amateur team.
Oh.
All of a sudden, leaving Oceania is like, ooh.
No.
It's still the right choice.
Still the right decision. That would be ridiculous if they're getting... $50 million almost yearly.
Yeah. And if they're smart, I saw some discourse online of like, well, what if you split this up amongst the league instead of the team taking it? So the team that qualifies still gets the most of the money. But if you split the remaining money up amongst the league, New Zealand could really get a proper footballing competition off the ground really quickly.
Mm.
That could almost make Wellington and the new Auckland franchise kind of, you know, are they best suited being in the A-League if they can be getting guaranteed $50 million regularly if they're the best performers?
I mean, that is a great... I love, and we've talked about this before, the role of New Zealand teams within the Australian competition. I personally love it. I think it makes for a great away day. Mm. It makes things a little bit tricky when it comes to Asian football qualification.
Yeah. We all know the best solution to this is just splitting AFC in half.
Yes.
And East Asia, West Asia, get rid of Oceania and absorb it into
East
Asia.
And that will never happen, unfortunately. I can't see that happening. But that would be fascinating if you've got an amateur club now starting to earn $50 million almost annually because that's just the way the qualification works. That would really, really change things up.
Yeah. I don't think the Club World Cup is annual. I think it's every 4 years.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Even still, splitting 50 million across 4 years, that's what, 12.5 mil a year.
It covers the entire budget of an A-League team and then some.
Yep, exactly. So, very interesting. Hey, one last player. That was a little bit of a sidebar. An interesting sidebar, but one last player to talk about.
On the note of 50 million.
Yes. Aaron Kunda at Adelaide, scoring once again. Great goal. Great player. And I think we will miss him in the A-League. He brings something that we would like to see more of, young players, but I've been so impressed by this kid.
Oh, mate. Age of 18, and he's been one of the best goal scorers in the A-League this year.
Mm. He's shown up Socceroos players.
Oh, it's crazy to me that people are saying he hasn't been consistent.
I think...
That's insane.
I think at the start of this season, there is evidence, potentially, or even you could justify that he's had a bit of a tumultuous season to begin with, but he's grown into the role that he has to play within this Adelaide side, and he's come on leaps and bounds.
I mean, yeah, sure. I think that's...
He's now meeting... I think expectation plays a big part in that
as
well.
Okay, yeah. You look at his performance as a winger, and he's still been phenomenal. Like, ignore the goals and assists, and he's still been great.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, but his chance creation.
James, we live in a country where goals and assists is everything. If you're not getting goals and assists, even as a centre back, you're stinky.
Yeah, who are you?
So yeah, he's been so good, and
I'm gonna miss being able to watch him in the daytime at a normal hour.
Yeah,
every single week.
I'm thankful that I get to say that I've seen him in the flesh.
Another chance of Brisbane fans to see him next week as well.
Yeah,
and Zakaria again.
Yeah, that's true. That's what I'll be doing that. On Anzac Day.
Booked in?
I haven't
booked in. It's Friday night, actually.
Well, it's day after.
Slate to the side, Anzac Day game. But yeah.
Haven't yet, but I will be there. What a player. What a player he is. I had a little side tangent. I went to Europe halfway through this footballing season, and I really wanted to catch a Spurs game because I just want to see Ange play. Mm. It didn't work out. Wasn't able to do it. But I had this real pinch me moment because I got to see Ange ball when it was in Brisbane, and now he's taking on the world with his style of football. And there was this moment that I had where I was like, "Oh, I've already seen this guy," and it would have been nice to see him again. But it's not like one of those experiences where I went to a Liverpool game and I was like, "Oh, this is actually I probably will not have this experience being able to watch these certain players or Jurgen Klopp manage ever again in my life," but. With Ange, I've already experienced that in the A-League. With Nesra Irinkunda, I've gotten to see him play in the A-League. When he's then taking on the world in years to come, I was there when he was playing at Dolphin Stadium at Redcliffe and tearing up the Raw defence. Like, and it's maybe slightly different with Ange because he's now coaching overseas and very rarely does he return to Australia to coach. We will see, hopefully, Aaron Kunda within the Socceroos squad.
Yes.
And you get to then still see him play. But, guys, I know that we're probably preaching to the people who are biggest advocates
of the choir.
Exactly. But we have an incredible chance to support Australian football while these footballers are in Australia playing in the A-League. And it baffles me still that you have people going, "Yeah, A-League's not that good. But I'll watch the Socceroos every 4 years. I'll get on board with the Socceroos and I'll support them."
It's the same people that will then turn around when Aaron Kunda's tearing it up for Bayern and say, "I remember this kid watching this kid. I knew about him before everyone else did," even though, yeah.
Yeah. And I know that we're speaking to the people who already know all this, but that's why we do this podcast. That's why we're passionate about it.
It's a shame that he won't be the most expensive Australian player of all time. Because we all know he's going to be staying at Bayern for the rest of his career and then moving on a free back to Adelaide after 800 appearances and 2,000 goals.
Yeah, I mean, Bayern...
That is said in jest for people listening.
Yes.
That is said in jest.
legally, that is a joke. Bayern, not a great season in the league this year. They knocked Arsenal out of the Champions League, but not a great season in the league with Leverkusen doing so well. Do they turn to Nesta next season?
Well, their director of football said their plan for him is straight into the first team.
That would be honestly wild to see him feeding Harry Kane.
Well, they've said time and time again that they remind him of the trajectory of Alphonso Davies.
Yeah.
Overseas, really good player, not really seen much in Europe. We're going to bring him over and we're going to get him straight into the first team because we can see the talent and we know it's going to translate.
Yeah. Plenty to get excited about, plenty to watch. Question of the week for me this week is, what storyline heading towards the end of the season are you most excited by? Whether it be a team, whether it be ideally a player, a Socceroo, an Oliroo, a future Socceroo. Would love to know who you're most excited by, and if there's anyone maybe we've missed that you think we should be covering, would love to know. If you're listening on Spotify, you can respond, or respond to any one of our socials, TikTok, Twitter, or Instagram is where you can find us. And send us a message or an email specifically, soccerwhospod@gmail.com. But other than that, that'll be it for another week of the podcast. Until next week, enjoy the football.